translation. Your respectable younger brother who possesses the strength of 10,000 elephants, killed by his grace, Jarasandha, whose feet were worshipped by many kings. These kings had been brought for sacrifice by Jarasandha's Maha Vidra Yajna, but they were thus released later. They paid tribute to your majesty. Purport. Jarasandha was a very powerful king of Magadha, and the history of his birth and activities are also very interesting. His father, King Bhadrarath, was also a very prosperous and powerful king of Magadha, but he had no son, although he married two daughters of the king of Kasi. Being disappointed in not getting a son from either of these two queens, the king, along with his wives, left home to live in the forest for austerities. But in the forest, he was benedicted by one great rishi to have a son, and gave him one mango to be eaten by the queens. The queens did so, and they were very soon pregnant. The king was happy to see the queens bearing children, but when the ripe time approached, the queens delivered one child in two parts, one each from the queen's wombs. The two parts were thrown in the forest, where a great she-demon used to live, and she was glad to have some delicate flesh and blood from a newly born child. Out of curiosity, she joined the two parts, and the child became complete and regained life. The she-demon was known as Jara, and being compassionate to the childless king, she went to the king and presented him with the nice child. The king was very pleased with the she-demon and wanted to reward her according to her desire. The demon expressed a desire that the child should be named after her, and the child was named Jarasandha, or one who was joined by Jara, the she-demon. In fact, this Jarasandha was born of one of two parts and parcels of the demon Viparajati, the saint by whose benedictions the queens bore the child, was called Chandra Kushagra, who foretold of the child before his father Bhadrarath. Since Jarasandha possessed demonic qualities from birth, naturally he became a great devotee of Lord Shiva, the lord of all ghostly and demonic men. Ravana was a great devotee of Shiva, and also Jarasandha. He used to sacrifice all rested kings before Lord Mahabharata Shiva, and by his military power he defeated many small kings and wrested them to butcher them before Mahabharata. There are many devotees of Lord Mahabharata or Kalihabharata in the province of Bihar, formerly called Magyar. Jarasandha was a relative of Kamsa, the maternal uncle of Krishna, and therefore, after Kamsa's death, King Jarasandha became a great enemy of Krishna, and there are many fights between Jarasandha and Krishna. Lord Krishna wanted to kill him, but he also wanted that those who served as military men for Jarasandha might not be killed. Therefore, a plan was adopted to kill him. Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna together went to Jarasandha in the dress of poor brahmanas and begged charity from King Jarasandha. Jarasandha never refused charity to any brahmanas. He performed many sacrifices also, yet he was not on the par of devotional service. Lord Krishna, Bhima, and Arjuna asked Jarasandha for the facility of fighting him. So it was settled that Jarasandha would fight with Bhima only. So all of them were the guests of and combatants of Jarasandha. And Bhima and Jarasandha fought every day for several days. Bhima became disappointed, but Krishna gave him hints about Jarasandha being joined together as an infant, and thus Bhima dissected him again and so killed him. All the kings who were detained in the concentration camp to be killed before Mahabharata were thus released by Bhima. Feeling thus obliged to the Pandavas, they paid tribute to King Jarasandha. So, there's obviously this purports about Jarasandha, so Prabhupada's given nice explanation. But this one little gem in this purport, which I'm going to try to talk about, and it's one sentence, or a couple of sentences. Jarasandha never refused charity to any brahmanas, yet he performed many sacrifices, yet he was not on the par of devotional service. As Prabhupada says in the purport, because he was in dominant qualities, his service, he was like his uncle Kamsa, who was also thinking of Krishna, but in the wrong way. So Jarasandha was also thinking, Krishna is my enemy. So with devotional service, of course, means. So I'm going to read something from Prabhupada's Nectar of Devotion, which is actually a summary, as it says on the back here, a summary study of Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita, Rasamrita. So, Chapter 2, Prabhupada describes Rupa Goswami's describes the three categories of devotional service which Sri Rupa Goswami describes in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu are listed as devotional service in practice, devotional service in ecstasy, and devotional service in the pure love of Godhead. Now also, there are five characteristics of devotional service. And the last one is devotional service attracts Krishna. And Prabhupada, he writes, Sri Rupa Goswami has stated that devotional service attracts even Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone. But devotional service attracts Krishna. The symbol of devotional service in the highest degree is Radharani. Krishna is called Madan Mohan. which means that he is so attractive that he can defeat the attractions of thousands of cupids. But Radharani is more attractive, still more attractive, for she can even attract Krishna. Therefore, devotees call her Madan Mohan Mohini, the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. To perform devotional service means to follow in the footsteps of Radharani and the devotees in Vrindavan. Put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. In other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world. It is directly under the control of Radharani. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the Mahatmas, or great souls, are under the protection of Daivi Prakriti, the internal energy, Radharani. So thus being directly under the control of the potency of Krishna, under the control of the internal potency of Krishna, devotional service attracts even Krishna himself. Here it is, right, yes. Now, in the book by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Tattva Vivekaka, again he comments on the Bhakta Rasa Sindhu. And he's, in Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the introduction, he gives the different types of bhakti or devotion. Number one in the list is chala bhakti, pretentious devotion. Two is abhas bhakti, a semblance of devotion. Three, pratibimba bhakti, a reflection of devotion, which means basically that's the people. That's Mayavadis are generally on that pratibimba bhakti reflection. Then kama mishra bhakti, then jnana mishra bhakti, of Ropya Siddha Bhakti, which is endeavors which are indirectly attributed to the quality of devotion. And seven is Sangha Siddha Bhakti, endeavors associated with favorable for the cultivation of devotion. And then Sutta Bhakti, unalloyed devotion. So, bhakti devotion as given by the acharyas. And then, now going back to the what Prabhupada has written in the Nectar of Devotion about generally we, as the Prabhupada said, we have to follow in the footsteps of Srimati Radharani and the residents of Vrindavan. Of course, we now being in material body, because of course they have a spiritual body and we have the material body. So therefore, we cannot directly approach Srimati Radharani and the associates of Vrindavan. But as his prior said, under the guidance. So what does that Prabhupada mean by under the guidance? It means that when Srimati Radharani is served by many thousands of gopis, and there's one group of young girls called Manjaris, who are actually intimate, they do intimate service to different services to Srimati Radharani. Of course, we know Rupa Goswami, Rupa Manjari, and so on, and Raghunath Das Babaji, Raghunath Das, and Sanatana Goswami. They are all Manjaris. So they appear, they actually descend, because we, as I said, we cannot directly approach Srimati Radharani directly, because we're not, because of our material conditioning and bodies. So we take shelter, because they come down, they descend as spiritual masters. And then from there it comes the Guru Parampara. So we know that that our Guru Parampara we see on the altar, they're all different, they're all Manjaris in the spiritual world. Of course, there's some debate who Prabhupada is, of course. Nobody knows. So they come. So we have to take shelter of the spiritual master, who is actually, yeah, we sing every morning, don't we? We sing every morning. Shiradika, Shiradika da para, Madhura lila guna rupananam, Prati vakraksha lupasya, Vande humshi guru vanavindam. The spiritual master is always eager to hear and chant about the unlimited glory, the unlimited congregational pastimes of Radhika and Madhava, their qualities, name, fame, and form. The spiritual master aspires to relish every moment of my respectful obeisances to the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. Nakunja yuno ratikeli silai, ya yukta yukta prakritiya, tatra daksha ativasya, vandeham shikuru kalyanvindam. The spiritual master is very dear because he is expert in assisting the gopis. At different times, makes different tasteful arrangements for the perfection of Radha and Krishna's conjugal loving affairs within the groves of Vrindavan. Offer my respectful humble obeisances unto the lotus feet of such a spiritual master. So this is, we say this every morning, and these are the qualities this is the identity of the spiritual master, that in his real identity, he is actually a Manjari, but he has descended to help the fallen, bonded, conditioned souls to come out of this material world. And it also, as it says in Prabhupada's Nectar of Ocean, that Radharani, let's read it again. Krishna is attractive, but Radharani is still more attractive. So that she's also more attractive. So she is. So because she's more attractive, Krishna can't understand this. So therefore, he comes as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand this. And in Guru Tattva, This makes So in Guru Tattva, this makes Srimati Radharani the topmost guru. Because in the Adi Leela 4:24, Radhika Prema Guru Ami Sishya Nata Sada Ami Nana Yatra Yachara Yujata. The love of Radha Radhika is my teacher, and I am her dancing pupil. Her prema makes me dance various dances. So even Krishna sees Radharani as his guru. And this is why Jayadeva Goswami says, Smaha Grila Kamamama Shivrasi Mandanam Dehi Padapadaram. Oh, he wrote this verse at Champahata, when writing a book, and its translation is roughly, O Radharani, I know you are upset with me, but please place your lotus feet on my head. So Radharani is the topmost guru, and but so then, because you cannot approach her directly, her intimate servants, they descend here in the form of the spiritual masters. So this is why we worship the spiritual master. He is, they say, we should, so then, devotional service means unalloyed devotion, nothing mixed. No, it's pure, generally. But as I said, Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Thakur has given different types of devotion. So therefore, now, this is devotion is. The other day I was hearing Srila Prabhupada lecture. Actually, it was last Saturday night on the evening dressing. And Srila Prabhupada, he said, in a very simple couple of sentences, or even one sentence, the purpose of this human life. He said, this purpose of this human life is simply to love God with devotion. That's all he said. The purpose of human life is simply to love God with devotion. And I've heard this before, but nowadays with these classes, when I first joined, these classes, they had the date, the place, and the date and the place where the classes were, but these classes recorded nowadays, they don't do that, so I can't. I wanted to write down where it came from so I could read it, but I suppose if we got a database, we could probably find it. So this is what Prabhupada said, and it really struck me that the purpose of this life is simply to love God with devotion. And sometimes, sometimes we read things and hear things we cannot understand. So it says in the one, I think, one of the seed verses of the Bhagavad Gita, those who offer me a love and devotion, I give them the understanding which they can come to me. So if you want to understand anything, we cannot. Krishna will give us understanding. So many times I've just been reading something or hearing something, then suddenly something just like that, I can understand it. Krishna's given me the understanding. And we cannot understand Krishna not just by reading the books. He says, not just by reading books or sastra can we understand Krishna. No. The way, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita, to understand is by bhakti alone. By bhakti alone can we understand Krishna, or devotion. So therefore, we have to develop intrinsic devotion to Krishna, which a spirit soul which we have, but it has been covered by the illusion that we are this material body. We're born in a certain country, we're male, we're female, because we've been enamored with this, we cannot remember that we are actually pure spirit souls that are meant to love Krishna. And the goal of life is to come to that stage eventually, which is called progena. Of course, first we have to have the sambandha and the abhideya. Of course, the sambandha is the eternal relationship that each and every individual spirit soul has with Krishna. The spirit soul is not, there's no one spirit soul the same. All these spirits, conditioned souls, spirit souls, are all individuals. This is why you see so many devotees here. Some are good at certain services, standing on certain services. This is their individuality. Like Ian there, he's good at kirtan. Yeah. And Daniel there, he's good at serving transfers. And of course, Jagat Priya Mataji, dressing Radha Krishna. And the other two ladies there, of course, doing their individual services. So everyone is individual. But we've forgotten this, completely forgotten it. This is why Prabhupada said, I think it was Houston or Dallas, at the airport press conference, one of the reporters said, why have you come here? He said, I have come here to remind you what you have forgotten. So we have to, of course we've forgotten it, so Krishna sends the spiritual master and he gives the diksha. Diksha actually means that the spiritual master reveals one's own individual relationship with Krishna in one of the five primary rasas. So it may not happen immediately. It may take time according to the adhikar or the qualities that devotee has. If that devotee is qualified to be given the knowledge, then the spiritual master will give it immediately, or it may take time. So this is actually real initiation. It's not just being sitting in front of a yajna and getting a new name and wearing some new neck beads and getting new japa. No, it means, initiation means that you're initiated into your relationship with Krishna. And then the Abhideya, this is an interesting, because the other day I read this description of Abhideya. It was service related to your relationship. And then from that, you develop from there you go on to the next highest level, which is Prajna, love of Godhead. So this is the process given by the acharyas, and so therefore we have to develop our devotion. Of course, in our conditioned state, we cannot do this by ourselves. So therefore, the guru, spiritual master, has to shower us with his kripa, his mercy. And as Bhakti Thakur, he says in kripa, Guru Kripa Bindu, I think it's the last verse, said, When I examine myself, I see nothing of any value. I will cry and cry, please give me one drop of your mercy. So, even though we may not feel we qualified, we are definitely not, I'm not qualified, but if we cry before the spiritual master, even though he's not physically present, wherever that spiritual master, if he's departed from this world or in some other place on this planet, he knows, because Krishna tells that spiritual master that there's a certain person who needs your mercy, please give him. So then that mercy comes. So this is the, so we have to get the mercy of the spiritual master then through the spiritual master's mercy, he will make arrangements for us for our devotion to increase, and then at the end of the life we can our life is perfected. But then the process is that then one takes birth in the holy dharma, life in Vrindavan or Mayapur, in a family of residence of Vrindavan or Mayapur, in that lifetime, they perfect that service, and then end of that lifetime, they go to the Goloka Vrindavan and Goloka Navadvip. So this is the process given by the acharyas. We don't go there immediately. We generally take birth in Vrindavan or Mayapur, in a family of pure devotees in those holy dharms, and engage in the service of Radha Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. And then once that is perfected, then in that life, we go back home, back to Godhead. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or comments or things you want to throw at me? Yeah. Anything? Nobody? Okay. Yes. Say it. Just shout it out. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, all revealed, yeah. They do.
Is it someone else at very advanced?
No, they do. Bhagavad Thakur in Navadvip Bhavataranga reveals that he's himself, writes himself at the end. He is Kamala Manjari at the end. And the also... There's a in Gaura Dipika that the names are revealed who they are in the spiritual world.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't. So you all are Parampara.
So what are you?
That's a secret.
I tell you who I am. I tell you who I am. 1992, a certain sannyasi here, he called me Maya Das, so I'm Maya Das. That's who I am. Then he said to me, become Krishna Das. So I still consider myself as Maya Das. I know when I'm perfected it by this life, when I see that certain sannyasi in his original sarup in the spiritual world, then I know I'm Krishna Das. But I see myself as Maya Das still. So anything else? Thank you for listening and tolerating me again.